A broadcast live from the centre of England, this is Waffle On about the Leaders Live Debate. Welcome to this very special edition of Waffle On. You are expecting Spaced. Do not worry, Spaced is on its way. The reason why we haven't done Spaced is, well, one, I ballsed up the recording on the first time.
Yes, you did, and I put all my bloody effort into that as well.
and we actually did it at your flat, so that we were sitting next to each other. You'll probably notice that we're doing this by Skype. And yeah, so I balls. Unfortunately, the editing of the first episode of it was a lot to be desired. So we're going to do it again. And the reason why we're not actually recording it at the moment is because I've lost the opening files that were sent to us by Jo Cummins from London, and she's done a brilliant thing. So I'm hoping she'll be able to send us it again. But don't worry, that will be uploaded the end of next week. So what do we have for you as a in between, almost like a
Aperitif.
An aperitif. It is an aperitif, not a pair of teeth.
Not a pair of teeth.
An aperitif. That's such a poor joke. But one.
Meds. Let's move swiftly on.
It's a joke that I have used on many a script.
You have. You've been using that since I've met you, since you're about 11 years old. You've used that one.
Yeah, so we actually could talk about a historical event that happened yesterday, which was we're recording this on. What day is it today? I keep thinking it's Saturday, you know. It happened on Thursday, and today is Friday. And it was the leaders' political debate. Kel, do you want to just mention how important this was, historically wise, for TV?
Well, I suppose that most other countries, like the States and Australia and most of Europe, they have their leaders go on TV, talk about it.
Yeah.
Now, I know ours is not... You know, ours is a different political system, but it's so important. And I mean, an historic point in our political history. This is politics in Britain will never be the same again after this. Whatever it accomplished, what we'll talk about in a bit, whatever it accomplishes or doesn't accomplish, it will never be the same again, because these are going to have to happen now every 4 to 5 years. So that's how important it is. It's like, I don't know, you can't imagine in the States, people in the States not having a presidential debate. Imagine that's being taken away all of a sudden. It's the same kind of thing, but reverse.
Yeah, good. Well put. I mean, I don't think we're going to get to the point of having local election debates, but I think it's definitely the start of something new in political desires and political debates. Last night, which was the 15th of April, I had to check my phone. our three main party leaders, although there are other party leaders such as... in UK Independence Party, Green Party, BNP, and all those other very small parties, didn't bother. But the three main leaders, which was Liberal Democrats, Conservatives, and Labour, led by Nick Clegg for Liberal Democrats, David Cameron for Conservatives, and Gordon Brown for Labour, all went on stage. Now, was it actually broadcast live, or was there a time delay?
I think there was a 5 to 10 minute delay.
Yeah, well, that's normal for TV anyway.
Just that they have to, because in case something does happen, or they have if they have a technical fault, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And in the state of the country we live in at the moment, you never know what nutter might be hanging around with a briefcase, and obviously we can't have that. He was presented by Alistair Stewart. Your opinion of Alistair Stewart? Oh, I should point out as well that we haven't talked about because we both watched it in our own homes. I've not talked to Kel about it, and you haven't talked to me about it, have you?
No.
So this is totally fresh conversation. So there might be arguments, there might be agreements, who knows. Your opinions on Alistair Stewart?
Terrible.
Oh, thank God you're gonna say that.
Terrible. I don't know, he just, it's, I think he panicked when they were talking too long, and he kept trying to interrupt. Because before the program, he'd been on the radio, on Radio 4 in the morning, I'd listen to, with him talking, that if they get boring, he was going to interject and stop them.
Right.
If they weren't being very talkative, he was going to get them to talk. Now, he got that completely wrong. Mm-hmm. When they were talking, interestingly, he tried to shut them up. When they're having the banter between each other towards the end of the show, which is what you wanted. You wanted to see the interaction between the, like a proper debate. If you have a proper debate in the real world, if you're talking, people don't just stand and listen to you. They will come in and say something. Mm-hmm. I know they're not meant to, but this is what happens. And when that was happening, he kept shutting them up.
Yeah.
And it's like, there was a few times when, once someone was asked a question, and the other one didn't answer it, and he should have been in there, like a red rag to a bull, he should have been in there straight away, answer that question.
That's it's like a bull to a red rag. You don't get a red rag searching out a bull. I totally agree with you, because it's a shame it wasn't on for a bit longer as well, to a certain degree. I mean, I know 90 minutes is a long time anyway, but they've virtually, you know, they loosened up round about the last 20 minutes. But what was annoying me is exactly what you two, Amanda, said, was the fact that once they got the question out there, now, we all know politicians, they're all going to work around the actual answer to start off with and then get into it. So, and he had a habit of one, cutting them off, and then going to the next leader and saying, you know, Mr. Cameron, what do you think? Mr. Brown, what do you think? And I was thinking, hold on a minute. He was actually giving a good point of view, and you just cut him off. To be fair, I know Alistair Stewart has been around for a very long time. I mean, he's an ITN newsreader, but he spent a lot of his time doing these, you know, police camera action videos. Where was David Dimbleby? Where, you know, I mean, okay, it was on ITV, I understand that, but Dimbleby, he does Question Time. He's a political analyst anyway. What about maybe even Jon Snow, Jeremy Paxman?
Even ITN, which has got a great name. Mm. You've got like that, Mark Lewis.
Yes.
He's the one with the big nose. Mm. That's the way I can describe him. They've got him, and they've got,
Martin Lewis or Mark Lewis.
Martin Lewis, that's it, yeah. Martin Lewis. You've got David Suchet's brother, what's he called now? You know his brother, the newsreader. Yeah. They've got. I can't think of his name now. This is because you dropped it onto me, like a thing. But I mean, yeah, it was just. I don't know. There was lots of things that some of the camera work was terrible.
Yeah, I really didn't like. I don't know. It's not really important to say, but the set was bloody awful. It was like an edition of the X Factor.
That was like 15-1. Remember that? Remember that game show?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? It's like that. It's like that, wasn't it? Someone said, I was thinking, is it not going for gold?
the set was bloody awful. The lights weren't too great. But, I mean, okay, we're here to listen to what they're there to talk about. You know, obviously the production values shouldn't really be that much important. But I noticed they all had the right ties on, except for Gordon Brown. He had a pink tie on. Why was he wearing pink? Is that to show his feminine side? Who knows?
I'll tell you what, there was a. I'll tell you one of my little neat bit I've got from it. Mm. Do you know when you were watching it last night?
Yeah.
You know, there was it 71 rules, right? One of the rules, right, was that the people from who were in the audience could only be from a 20 to 25 mile radius.
Right,
in Manchester. So it was local Manchester crowds.
Yeah.
Did you see when you were watching it last night, there was a Jewish kid asked a question about crime?
Yes, yeah. He looked a little bit like the one out of In Between Us.
He was on the one with Nick Griffin in the BNP, and he was in London, and he's from London. How was he on that programme?
Well, he's the token Jewish person. Somebody actually tweeted on there, because I watched it, and I also had Twitter open as well. And loads of people were turning around saying, okay, let's see if we can get a demographic going on here. So you had like, you know, the Jewish lad on there to ask his question. You had, like, you know, the Asian person and the black person. And it was interesting to see if there was going to actually do – I don't think they did the whole demographic, but somebody did actually put a picture on there saying Cameron's notepad, and he had a list of ticking things off of who to talk to. Without giving, because obviously we're not going to talk about the purposes of the politics, because we've got our own opinions and it's not something to talk about. From a viewer's point of view, a purely viewer's point of view, who looked the most, not, I'm going to go on to who you thought came out best later, but who do you think looked the most calm to start off with and carried on through?
Nick Clegg.
Yeah, Nick Clegg as well. I think, you know what I think?
He sewed the thing up. Do you know, yeah, but I think, go on, carry on now.
I was just going to say, Nick Clegg looked the most natural. David Cameron looked as if he'd had Botox, or at least a hell of a lot of makeup put onto his slap, because I couldn't see many wrinkles at first. And I think Zoe Margulis, who's an author, turned round and said he's had Botox or he's a robot. And Gordon Brown, once again, looked like one of those bobblehead dolls. Very small body, massive head.
You know, and I tell you what, he kept doing that inane grin as well. He kept doing.
Oh God, his YouTube.
Did you see him? Oh, the one thing I can't stand when someone's having a go at you, don't smile at them.
No,
it's not normal. You can see he's constantly thinking in the back of his mind, got to smile.
Yeah,
got to smile. If he's not a smiley man, don't smile.
You know, and he's not a smiley man one bit. I mean,
but we don't expect him to be like that. We expect him to be good at his job, and that's all that matters, really.
Yeah. Yeah, Nick Clegg came across as very calm.
That very South African.
Nick Clegg, diplomatic community.
That's our South African fan base down the line.
Yeah, we don't have any fan base in South Africa. According to our reports, we don't have any in Africa at all. Although we do have one in Cairo. I know that's not Africa, but they, yeah, racists. yeah, Clegg. Now, whether he's had extremely good media training, I'm not too sure, but he was the only one out of all three of them who acknowledged the questioner but looked at the camera.
Yeah, he did.
And so he was looking at the audience. And, of course, when you're going to, you know, you're putting your point of view and you're selling yourself, which is the idea of the whole of these. If you're actually looking at the viewer, not ridiculously into camera, obviously he was looking slightly off camera, but he's actually talking to you. As Cameron did it a little bit, but Gordon Brown didn't at all.
No, he's not media savvy, though, is he, in any way? But it shouldn't really matter.
Not really, no. But these things matter when it comes to selling yourself.
Definitely. And I think with Nick Clegg as well, I think he was always going to win that, wasn't he? Because what could he have done that could have ruined it? Even if he would have made, you know, slips and everyone would have thought, oh, you know, the good old liberal, you know, he's not going to win anyway. But because he did really well, I don't know, we'll talk about what it's going to accomplish, but I still don't think it's going to change much, but I think he did come across the best. I've no doubt that. And I think he worked on that very difficult. I think he had a lot of work in the day.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think he did a lot of preparation and fair play too. I mean, I must admit, I don't know an awful lot about Nick Clegg. I know he's a young bloke, but I think he put himself across pretty well. I thought really from a viewer's point of view, especially with Alistair Campbell just virtually interrupting him. What was your biggest gripe about the whole thing? And you can point out individual gripe of the people, of the leaders as well.
The actual questions, the way the questions worked out, because to me, when I first read about this about, you know, 6 weeks, no, I told you, I applied for, you know about this, I applied for tickets for this show, and I thought that the first show was going to be about the economy, the second show about foreign policy, and the third show about others, basically, home, whatever's going to happen, but it ended up being about everything else, and to me, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan and Iraq is quite a big, but that's not an important subject on them kind of programs, because it's the army that make a lot of them decisions. And I think, well, what's good, you know, what's Gordon Brown going to say? I ain't done enough. So what's the point in asking questions on that? I thought they should have got that out. That should have been on for about foreign policy. Should have been about the economy yesterday. And the immigration question, again, it was just a waste of time, wasn't it? Because no one would be honest and talk about whether you agree or disagree, but they don't even talk about it. Thirdly, I couldn't stand the way the audience was quiet. To me, that's not a debate. It's not a debate. If you're that scared, where you're scared to, because they all agreed on this, where they wouldn't be heckled, if you can't take a bit of heckling, you know, these come from politicians. These are meant to be politicians and go onto a doorstep and convince you to vote for someone or go to a town hall meeting and argue the toss with someone about it. But no, it just ended up a very strange atmosphere. Did you find that? The atmosphere was the way it was deadly silent in there.
I thought it was a bit like, knocking the microphone. It was a little bit like when New Red Dwarf came back. And you had that episode where there was no laughter.
It's weird, isn't it?
And it is weird. And I think, and I agree with you when you turn around and say, you know, you need to have that feedback back. Because at the end of the day, they have Prime Minister's Question Time. Yeah. They have, and let's face it, they're constantly and all that. I mean, that's what you get, real bad hecklers. So having some audience members going boo, you know, and there's about, what, 200 there, maybe something like that? It's not really going to put you off your stride, is it? I think what you were saying about economy, well, they did bring the economy up because they talked about recession. And then, which, of course, Gordon Brown answered, his answer was, well, we're not to blame for it. And it's like, well, you are in charge.
was another thing he kept doing in that. It's Gordon Brown's worst trait is he constantly has to talk about the Tories. Mm. From 13 years ago they were in. You can't blame them anymore. You might as well just come on. You might as well, what the Tories going to get in? And they're going to spend, if they get in, they're going to spend the next 4 years blaming. I can't stand the way politicians do that.
It's That's always the thing, isn't it? I mean, as you say, Labour have been in power now for 13 years. If Conservative Party do get in for the next 4 years, as you say, the worst thing they could possibly do is to turn around every question. You know, what are you going to do about the economy? Well, of course, Labour screwed us for 13 years. Well, you can't say that because the whole point is people want to know what you're going to do for the future, not what's gone on in the past, because it's pointless. Same thing as about the war in Iraq. I think you can't really argue about the reasonings for that, because purely for the fact that, you know, that we all know what they said about it. But I think the point of supplying the army with decent, you know, armor and clothing, and I don't care what Gordon Brown turns around and says, I'm sure as hell you can get Land Rover, which is just down where we live, to make a bloody good armored, you know, truck that ain't going to blow people's legs off. I'm not being funny. They did it for Tomb Raider. Why can't they do it for the army? America supply their forces with decent stuff. So does Australia. So does the rest of bloody Europe. So why can't we? It's just not paying the money out. Okay. Now, whether you agree with the war or whether you don't agree with the war, even if you don't agree with the war, you still don't want people dying for the lack of decent stuff. So he should have turned around and said, you know what, we should put more money into it. But no, because that would be admitting his faults.
He won't do that, will he?
No. The one thing that really annoyed me, and he was, Cameron's supposed to be pretty media trained, and he didn't really do that well, I thought. Oh, really? I thought he would have done a lot better.
He did second best, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Nick Clegg, really, as you said earlier on, he couldn't really do no wrong, because he just turned around and just kept pointing at, well, look what you've got, you know.
Yeah.
But Gordon Brown, and I had to tweet this a few times, please, please, get your tongue out of his backside.
Yeah,
we know it's all because of a hung parliament, the possibility of a hung parliament. We all know that it's Nick Clegg's going to be the one who's going to go, well, who am I going to choose? Now, you're not going to get round him by saying, oh, I agree with Nick. Because Nick Clegg's sitting there going, I couldn't give a fuck if you, oops, sorry, I couldn't give a damn if you agree with me. You know, just put your answer across. And he did it a few times, and to the point where Alistair interrupted. And he was saying, I agree with Nick. And Alistair Campbell interrupted him. And he just started laughing. I'm sorry, Alistair Campbell. Alistair Stewart interrupted him. And then Gordon Brown started laughing. And he thought, look, start buttering up to him. You know, Nick Clegg's biggest downfall was his constituency is Sheffield, isn't it? And he kept saying that, my constituency, Sheffield. Well, I was thinking, well, you know, you don't need to keep telling us that, because I'm sure the people in Sheffield may vote for you. They may well be voting for you. Who knows? But you don't really sound too Sheffield-y.
And you know what school he went to? He went to Westminster School in London, which is was in the top five poshest schools in the bloody country. And you know who he went to school with? Louis Farrow.
Oh, did he really?
He was 2 years below him, and he used to go on holiday with him. True fact. You can look on that if you want, but that's a true fact. Louis Farrow went on holiday with Nick Clegg when he was 17, and he was 19 to America, and then a road trip across America.
Really?
With Louis Farrow's brother. Louis Farrow's brother was in the same year as Nick Clegg.
Ah.
And that's what they all got. There you go. There's an interesting tidbit for you.
And Louis Farrow's father is Paul Farrow, the famous travel author. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Louis Theroux has just been on TV, actually. He's been on the One Show earlier, huh?
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So out of the 90 minutes, I stayed there watching it for the whole 90 minutes. And there was something, I don't know if you felt it, but because it's the reason why we're doing this short podcast on it is because it was a historical TV moment. And I did feel quite proud about watching something that was quite historical. It was a little bit like watching, I know that you probably wouldn't agree with this slightly, but like a royal wedding that mattered. Do you know what I mean?
I understand. I am a royalist. So
did you stand up then when I said Walter?
No, I'm not that bothered.
The Queen?
No, I've got the institution of royalty, not the actual people. Anyway, let's not get into that debate because that'd be an whole different podcast.
Well, you do like Philip.
I do like Philip.
And I have a soft spot for Charles because he's just so crazy.
I hope it is a soft spot.
Well, now I could be sent to the tower for that kind of innuendo. And I thought there was definitely that historical feeling, you know, that you're actually witnessing something important. As you said at the beginning of the show, that this could be something that will happen every 4 years. Or maybe even if, because, okay, we get live Prime Minister's Question Time on the radio, and I think you get it on the Parliament channel on TV, I think. I don't know if it's the full Prime Minister's Question Time or it's an edited version or a bit of it. But maybe if something really big happens where we do need a proper big debate, it will be put on TV. Do you think that will happen or do you think that's looking too far ahead?
It all depends what happens. By the, you know, I think the first one last night was quite tetchy, I thought. Anyway, don't call me tetchy.
Tetchy.
I just think, you know, there was sound in it. It's like people say, you know, it's like I was reading a political commentator today, John Pienaar, off Radio 5 Live, was saying, don't think that Nick Clegg's got this all sewed up because there's two more debates left yet.
Yeah.
So I think after we've sorted three, I think they'll make a decision whether it'll happen again.
Yeah. When's the next one?
Next Thursday, then next Thursday after, then the Thursday after that's the election.
And are these all on ITV?
No, you've got BBC next week and then Sky the week after.
Oh, man, so I'm going to miss the Sky one.
Yeah, you're going to miss the Sky one.
I might come back to yours then.
I don't know. They are doing something. I think they are going to find some way of getting... I don't know what they're going to do, but they are going to find a way of getting on the TV. I think they're going to show highlights. But anyway, I think it's going to change. But, yeah, I don't know. I think it will happen again. I think 10 million people ain't wrong, are they?
Is that what the viewing figures were? I mean, I didn't get a newspaper today because...
About 9.8 million. He said it peaked at 10 million during half. Then obviously people went to bed or whatever. And by the end, it was 9.8, which is brilliant in this country.
That's an extra... I don't... What other programme has got 10 million viewers?
Beat EastEnders and Carnation Street. What says that, you know, the proves that the country has got a brain somewhere.
Oh, it's on the same par as Doctor Who. Excellent. As you say, 10 million is, our biggest gripe at work is what we talk about. I mean, we talk about politics virtually every day at work, but is the lack of people actually going out to vote. And as we always turn around and say, well, if you don't vote, then you have no right at all to comment on how the country is being run. If 10 million people tuned in to watch a television programme about a debate, and 10 million is, as you say, absolutely huge for what this subject matter is, because let's face it, a lot of people do. I mean, I put on Facebook yesterday about watching the debate, and I had a few comments on it, and one someone did actually turn around and say, that's boring. Well, it isn't boring because it affects your life, you know. I mean, okay, but, you know, whether they'll get 10 million on the next show, I doubt that. I think you'll probably get around about 7.5 million.
Yeah, it's just like a bit of a freak, you know, like a freak thing, wasn't it? Oh, my, let's got to look at this, and then they'll soon get bored of it. I think it happens the same in the States. I think the first ones are really well watched, and by the end of it, it just drops off.
Do you think we're getting more towards the American style of politics?
If you want to go, you know, if you want to get into the depth of this, it shouldn't be like this, because in Britain, in America, because they're a republic, they vote for a person and a party separate. They vote for the person to be the leader and then a party to rule the Senate. Or that's what you've got at the moment. You've got you've got Obama in charge, but I think most of the Senate is Republican. I think that's actually changed now. But I think under George Bush, I think he was a Republican, but most of the Senate was Democrat. I think that's right. I think some American people tell me I've got that completely wrong.
Yeah, please do let us know.
Wrong, I've got that. But I think in Britain, we're voting for a party. The party votes for the leader.
Yeah.
That's how it always works. They're voting for a chairman of their party. So we shouldn't be voting for the chairman. That's their... But it has changed now. It's like American-style presidential politics in our parliamentary system. So it's a very odd mix, really, because you're not just voting. If you're voting for David Cameron, you ain't just voting for David Cameron. You're voting for Ed Miliband. You know, not Ed Miliband. You're voting for George Osborne, and you're voting for Chris Hume. All these, and then the same. You're not just voting for one person. You're voting for the party. And it's a shame that I would have liked it if they would have done another one tonight, and it would have been
the Shadow Chancellor and the Shadow Chancellor,
and like the person in charge of the army, or the person involved for Ministry of Finance. I would have liked to have seen every single person have a go, because it's an odd thing, really. You ain't just voting for Nick Clegg, you're voting for the Liberal Democrats. In America, they are voting. They were voting for McCain or Obama, and that's where it's odd. But I do like it, and it's open democracy up in this country, because, let's be honest about it, most people don't listen to bloody Prime Minister's Question Time. I think it's about 3 million people listen to it. You know, nearly 10 million people watched that last night. And if that, even if, you know, if it changed, if it caused 3 million people more to vote, that's got to be a bloody good thing, hasn't it? Whether how right it is or not.
Oh, exactly. I mean, do you think that 10 million people tuning in actually is a representation of how disgruntled the United Kingdom is?
I think it probably is, but I think there's another 40 million who just don't give a toss.
Yeah, I think that
I'm afraid. Well, luckily, you know, we've got Aaron at work, you know, our mate at work. He's a lovely kid. Going to vote. Vote for what? I blame the education system, because I think politics should be taught at school.
It's funny, I was just about to say that to you, because we was actually taught politics at school. It was actually done in two lessons. I mean, as people probably know, me and you actually was in the same class at school. We had history, which was taught, apart from the Industrial Bloody Revolution, but we was also taught the history of politics at one point. And we was also taught in general studies. Politics. Now, I don't know if schools still do general studies, but we were taught the differences of parliaments, the difference of parties, the point of parliament, and of course, again with the history, where our politics comes from, and the importance as well of the monarchy dissolving government and all this kind of stuff. But as you say, I don't think you get that. I mean, you don't even get PE nowadays at school. So if you're not getting, you know, physical education, why on earth are you going to have them talking about politics? You won't.
Like I said, this might be a quite controversial statement now, but we are waffle on. They won't do a lesson for politics, which I think it could have its own lesson in politics. And not just politics, this is local politics, how you can get into politics, open it up for the different classes, because they know what they're talking about. But they'll still teach, you know, religious education, which really is a personal choice. It's got no influence on the country, where politics can change the country, but they'll leave that out. That's a very strange thing in this country. But they got, that's just, I know I'm being an atheist, I know you're going to say, well, that's the stupid, but I think, you know, if religion's taught, politics should be taught. Then you give people the choice when they leave the school, what way they want it, or have a mix of both, or whatever you want to do.
What I was going to say, do they still teach RV at school?
RV at school, yeah.
Now, if that's the case, then they've got a hell of a lot to teach them then, because when we was at school, we was taught basic Christianity, the religious studies of the Bible. Well, not even the Bible, it was points of the history of that. So if that's the case, then I'd hate to be at school now having to learn all these different religions. And as you say, that should be a personal choice, and it should be something that should be picked up on. In my point of view, I mean, I'm not, you're an atheist, I'm not, I'm more agnostic, but my belief is that you should be able to learn everything, but obviously you can't. You've got to have a choice. So maybe they should open it up as a choice of, like, you know, political science, which is what it would be called, religious studies, and chemistry and physics, you know, and that kind of stuff that you can choose. And maybe in the second, you know, as you start school. But I mean, would your parents choose that and not you? That's the problem, isn't it? Really,
I just think it needs to be. I don't know. I think the politics is just an important thing. You know, the intricate.
Why do you think? I mean, you said that you mentioned it because you think it's something to do with school. Do you think it's that, or do you think what else do you think is for the general apathy of the younger people? Because it is the young, I'd say 80% of the people who don't vote are young people. The other 20% are just people who are either lazy or can't be bothered.
I think there is abstainers. I think I don't believe in the system like in Australia where you've legally got to vote, because I think you can abstain. I know you can go and spoil your paper, but I think you've got the right to abstain. You've got conscience, you know, in the war, you can be a conscientious objector. I think you're the same with politics. If you don't, you shouldn't have to vote. But I think the point is, I think the complete apathy of politics is just because I think most young people, the politicians don't live their lives. I think most, when we were at 18, 19, 20, all we cared about was girls, booze, drugs, football, sport. So they don't talk about that kind of thing. They talk about pensions. Mm. Now, to an 18-year-old kid, a pension doesn't mean anything. I know it should, but it doesn't. So they've got to find a way of engaging them.
But didn't you? I mean, I was excited about being able to vote. In fact, I'm sure that when we turned 18, we actually missed the general election by 3 months. We had to wait another few years. But I remember being really excited. It was almost like a call of being an adult, you know, that. But I was the same when I got to 18 and thought about going to the pub.
Yeah, I think meant to be just in the minority. I think I'm not saying that because there is lots of 18-year-old 90 who do vote. I'm not saying that because university or whatever. But there's a whole swathe of as the great unwashed, as people call them, they've got no interest in voting. I think we could sit down and talk to our friend at work, Aaron, who's a non-voter, and he just wouldn't resonate with him. It just would not resonate with him. The only thing that resonate with him is crying. Probably crying. and we know why. Yeah. You know, so, you know, I'm afraid that's it. So do you want people like that go forced to vote if they're going to vote for someone stupid that don't really care? I don't personally, but this is a good debate. It's a good debate. We don't talk about it. We don't even talk about it.
The thing is, though, is that it's like, see, this is the point, though, isn't it? Is that if it gets to the point where there's so many more people who just can't be bothered and just sitting there and watching the world go by, then that's just not on, is it, really? Or is that my downfall? For just getting annoyed by idiots.
I think actually your threshold for idiocy is not very high, is it?
What I can't stand is just apathy. Yeah. You know, I can't stand. I know you two man once said apathy is a new anarchy.
It is.
Well, you know, I can't stand people who don't have an opinion. That's my own downfall. That's my own thing. I just everyone should have an opinion on something that affects your life, because, you know, there's going to be a point where we just come out of the worst recession in over, what was it, 60 years or something?
Oh, God. Since the 30s.
Yeah, since the 30s. And it's affected us at work, because we're still on a four-day week. It's affected people who got lost their jobs. There's people I know who have lost their jobs. And, okay, I know it's a worldwide thing, but we can't concentrate what happens outside because we can only control what happens here. And the point is that you turn around and say, hold on a minute. You could lose your job tomorrow because the government that's in, whether it's their fault or not their fault, they are responsible for trying to get things back on track. Now, if you're not happy with what they're doing, then you should vote for them to get out. Okay, if they get back in, then fair enough. If they don't, they don't. But don't moan about losing your job. Don't moan about not having, you know, your national insurance has gone up, or your tax has gone up, or your pint of beer has gone up, your wine or your cigarettes have gone up. Don't moan to me about it if you haven't voted. And that's what annoys me. That's what gets my goat. And if what happened last night on TV, that 10 million people tuned in to watch his programme, if that's something that's going to bring it forward, then that's the best for it. I'd be really interested to see what the age demographic of that was last night.
Well, I'll tell you, it'd be 30s, 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
Well, they said, I watched a programme on the news today where they went to Bristol, and he said they asked about 1,000 people on the spot, just running around doing them pop questions or to people. Yeah. And they said they didn't...
pop questions.
That's what they call them, pop questions. It's not popular vote. They interviewed, I think it was about 100 people under 30, and not one of them watched it.
Really?
Yeah, there you go. Because young people are just a big disillusioned, because I don't know, because I'm afraid, meds, we're not under 30 anymore, so we need some under 30 people. We need some podcasters who are out there to get in touch with us and tell us why they didn't watch it.
Yeah. We know for a fact we got the Slothian, who left us a review on iTunes. You'll be mentioned in the next episode, Slothian. He's a young lad, because he said that as young as I am, so I suspect he's a young fellow. So if you've listened to this podcast, please... and if you're in England, or if you're outside of England and you're young,
sure, because you go on YouTube.
Yeah, it's banned. But is this a worldwide thing as well? I mean, does this kind of apathy? Is this just because obviously we generally concentrate what happens in our country because we get annoyed by what, you know, what we see on the streets and everything. Is this a worldwide thing? Does America have the same kind of apathetic youngsters? Does Germany? Does France? Does Italy? Does Australia? You know,
in the last American election, I think only 39% of the country voted.
God, that's a terrible
thing. You think of the size of America, that's a lot of people.
Mm.
So, that's 25%.
Jeez. So I mean, I know Scotland and Wales have their own. I mean, he balls that up, didn't he? Old Alistair Stewart, he balls that one up. But I mean, Scotland and Wales for our Scottish and Welsh listeners. I think you're having yours. Is it next Tuesday?
Tuesday,
or something?
Yeah. I'd like to watch that.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get it though, will we?
Nah.
So on the outcome, I've got the graph in front of me of let's just get this up so that I know what I'm saying. Who do you think came out? What was the first, second, and third on the?
Well, I'd say on presentation skills, I'd say Clegg number one.
Yeah.
Cameron number two, number three, Brown. I'd say for actual policies, I think Cameron won the policies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd probably it's probably say Clegg and then Brown. But I think the thing with Gordon Brown, he didn't have nothing new to say, and that was his problem, wasn't he? Because everyone knows what he's done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Flogged out gold. Anyway.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah, according to I'm on the Guardian website, though, and they've got the reaction tracker, which was when he was watching it, he was going in. Clegg seems to have won it all the way through, Brain in the middle, and Cameron dropped quite a bit, but again, this is, of course, Bowman's the Guardian. So, I mean, obviously, Liberal's probably going to be slightly higher. No, I'll probably agree for total presentation, calmness, Clegg. Then Cameron and Brown. Policies, I'll probably go, I thought, from watching it, this isn't reading analysis, it's purely from last night, Cameron, Clegg and Brown. Overall, though, I think Cameron could have done a lot better. Brown was just doing what I thought he would have done, really.
Had a really good closing speech.
I thought his closing speech was the best out of all of them.
Really passionate, yeah. It was really good, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he looked like he'd been building up to that, if I'm honest. Yeah. But overall winner out of all of it, I'd probably have to go for Nick Clegg.
Yeah, and I'd say it was Nick Clegg. Yeah. If you put it on, yeah, if you had to, yeah. Whether that's going to make a difference in the... Because I think another thing we haven't talked about, I think most people who watched that knew the vote. I wouldn't have said there's many people who probably were undecided and watched that and thought, well, I've changed my mind completely. No. I just can't imagine it, because I think most people who watched that are interested in politics and know the party. I know you shouldn't know your party, but you do. Let's be honest, mate.
Well, of course you do, because if you have an interest in... In politics, I have my opinion, you have yours, and generally you're going to be tuning in because you want to see the person that you're going to vote for, what they're actually going to say, and if it's going to be worth it. My wife said a funny thing last night. She turned around and said, "Well, you know what? After that, I'm now less decided."
Yeah,
so she actually had an idea who she was going to vote for, but afterwards she said, "Now I'm not 100% too sure." So. There you go. But there again, that's because three leaders have stood in front of the TV and given their points of view. And it should make you think. That's the whole point. It's to make you think. It's to make it, instead of just being one track minded of, well, I've always been a so-and-so voter, I'm going to vote for them again, which is, I get so tired of hearing. I've always voted differently. Sorry about hitting the microphone there, but I've always voted generally differently because I'll vote for what I think is good for the country coming ahead. You know, I'm not going to turn around and say, oh, well, you know, so-and-so did a great job in 1890 or something. You know what I mean? You just don't do it, do you? So, it'd be interesting to see what the outcome is on the next two televised things. We won't be doing another one of these. This is just a one-off because it was a historical moment. Okay, so that was our brief little political chat. I say brief. We've been talking for 40 minutes. So I don't know how long this podcast will actually be. But yeah, good. So we've got Space coming up next week, which I will get right, Cal. Don't worry.
Yeah. And we're going to do what we talked about the other day. We're going to do one, aren't we?
We are going to do one, and I'm going to let you talk about that one.
Going to do a Star Trek one. Only next gen, mind, don't we? Only next gen.
Yeah, we're doing TNG, and the reason why we're doing TNG is because we were there when it first started.
I think what we should put out as well, it's not going to be entirely really heavy, serious one, is it?
Oh, no.
We like a lot of the bad things of Next Generation, don't we?
Well, you know, I have my favourite my favourite actor in all my favourite character in TNG. He's Riker.
Yeah, so it's going to be, I'd say it was more of a warm one, because we always found it, we always loved it, but around it, you know, me and you are very much like that. We like our programmes, but we like the flaws in them as well, don't we?
Well, I think that's the whole point, if to put us in a bracket of geekdom, is the fact that you should always... I mean, come on, I'm a massive Doctor Who fan. Kudos to Matt Smith, by the way. Probably going to be the best Doctor out of all 11 of them. I watched The Leisure Hive the other day. And that's a 1980 Tom Baker episode. there's a bit where this monster... I don't know if you've seen Leisure Hive.
Have you seen Leisure Hive?
Yeah. And it's a bit where his body gets caught, you know, in parts and his arms are over the side. Yeah. He's terrible because the arms are... But there's a bit where there's an alien and he pops his head round and you just see the eye and then a claw. And you think, that's really bad, but you've got to love it. Yeah. Oh, indeed. So we're going to be doing Star Trek The Next Generation. If you want to send us in comments, please do. We'll keep them all. And we, trust me, I will put them in file. Unlike Joe's one, which I left on you.
Most of me, it's going to be post for your TNG and we'll explain that. As when we do it, won't we?
Yeah, don't spoil the fun. post girth. We're going to be doing that. We're also then going to be doing a special on Chris Morris. And we've got our mate Woody, who's going to be joining us for that. We're doing Blackadder Goes Forth, which is going to be joined by Pete Coleman. And Phil's going to be joining us for something as well. What was that now? Can't remember what it was now. Oh, well, it'll come to us. But we have actually got another sci-fi one to do, which is Quatermass, because I've still got your DVDs here. And we're going to be dropping back into the 1960s. We have a couple of classics. We've got Steptoe and Son for the 60s, Dad's Army in the 70s. And we're also going to be doing the best of children's TV that me and Cal was brought up with, which would be 70s. Obviously, some of these was made in the 1960s. But we'll be having, I've already talked to him, well, I talked to him, emailed him, and we're going to be interviewing somebody for that program. And it's a guy who does a children's TV program now called Somerton Mill. If you get a chance, go onto YouTube, look up Somerton Mill. It's made in the style of Chumpton and Campbell with Green. It's how I think children's TV programs should be, but we'll talk more about that when the time comes. Some quick shout outs first. We desperately do need a few more reviews on iTunes because we like them. Even if you want to slag us off, please do. It's entirely up to you. We'll mention you in the show. Won't we, Kat?
Yes. We love it. We love it.
And obviously we have a Facebook page. Type in Waffle on Podcast in the search bar. You'll see our little symbol, which is on the Pipein account. Come and join us. And if you want to friend me on Facebook, you can do, but you will only find me through Waffle on. No point typing my name in it because I've put security on it. There you go. Anything else, Cal, you want to bring up?
Yeah, I do. It's The Prisoner tomorrow night, young man.
Oh, ho, ho. Yes, indeed. I've got a bottle of wine ready and some chocolate.
I everyone in America has saw it, haven't they? But it looks really good. I do, haven't the trailer? It looks really good.
Yeah, I mean, I've done something I don't normally do. When I was making The New Prisoner, I did go on the site and I was looking at a few of the pictures and a couple of the old video downloads, but I know there's been a lot more stuff put up recently. I've not watched any of it. I don't want to because I was tempted to watch a couple of the classics, the classic series from 66 earlier on, but I think I'm just going to, you know, build up to it for tomorrow night and really looking forward to it. I mean, they got a vote.
We're bound to talk about it next week, ain't we?
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely. We've got a few shout outs to people next week as well, those people who've kindly donated to Waffle On and also sent us comments in. And we've got the shows dedicated to two ladies next week. And that's it from me. Kel, anything else you want to say before we sign off?
No, I think I've said enough. This is meant to be a 10-minute podcast. And how long we've been on here now?
I've been on 45 minutes and my wife's giving me a cup of tea. Quite clearly, she thinks I'm not coming downstairs.
Yeah, it's supposed to be 10 minutes, isn't it? We're going to do it quicker. Well, finding me up a quickie's last time.
Oh, you got in there before I could...
yeah, I got in there.
Anyway, thanks for listening and we'll see you all for the next episode, which will be Waffle On about space. See you soon.
Ta-ra!
Arrow. everyone. This is Stephen Shapansky speaking to you on behalf of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance, or as I like to call it, the Doctor Who Alliance of Podcasts, because then I can call it DWAP. I'm here to tell you about another Doctor Who signing at Waterston's Lakeside in Turrick in England on Saturday, April the 24th, between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. The special guest this time round, Nicholas Briggs, voice of the Daleks, Cybermen, oh, the Jadoon, plenty of other voices. Oh, I think he was a Nesting Consciousness as well, yes. He'll be there signing copies of his Big Finish Test, Sherlock Holmes, Holmes and the Ripper, of which, of course, he plays Sherlock Holmes. As well, he'll probably be signing some of his other Dalek CDs that Big Finish has put out. He'll also have his ring modulator there, so you can hear the sound of the Daleks live and in person. Nicholas Briggs is a fantastic guy. We talked to him at Gallifrey as part of our coverage on Radio Free Scarlet there, and he is just a wonderful chap. So you would do very well to go along and meet Mr. Briggs and chat with him about many different things. The Doctor Who Alliance of Podcasts, see, I'm still saying it, they'll be there. They'll be there recording a podcast, just as they were at the recent Colin Baker signing. So that podcast will be out and about for any other member of the DWAP. I think there's about 53 of them now, I think. To download on their feeds, or it's open to everyone. It'll be great. I think Tony Galchon from The Flashing Blade will be there. I think Adam Purcell of Staggering Stories, and perhaps many, many more. I won't be, of course, because I'm in Canada, you see. It's a bit of a commute. But you can be. Again, that's Waterstones, Lakeside, and Turrick, Saturday, April 24th, 2010, between 11 and 1. Meet Nicholas Briggs. So thank you on behalf of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance.
If you like a good science fiction story, then you'll like The Martians Are Here podcast by Australian author Stefan Sonnen. The Martians Are Here podcast is a science fiction serial around 15 minutes per podcast episode set in the not-too-distant future. It's a story about two alien species from very different origins who bring their ongoing war to Earth with disastrous consequences for humanity. The story is told through the eyes of five people who must piece together what's going on in order to survive. This is what happens when biology, technology, and adaptability collide. The Martians Are Here podcast on iTunes and on themartiansarehere.com.
Hello, I'm Max Buffer.
And I'm Terry Bland.
And we're from the Max Buffer's Media Museum podcast.
We take you back to shows you may have missed.
Such as the sci-fi spectacular, Infestoid.
And shows we'd love to make.
Including Get Your Chops Round This,
TV Phone Sex Tragedy,
and Britain's Got Orphans.
So catch us on your actual iTunes or
at www.mediamuseum.co.uk.
No, I don't think he likes you at all. No, I don't like you either. I love that. That is so great. That's good writing.
Yes, because it's not much dialogue.
And because George Lucas didn't write all the dialogue.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Angela.
And when you're not listening to this glorious podcast, we would love to have you listen to ours. The Anomaly Podcast.
That's Anomaly Podcast.com.
Greetings, guildies. I'm Kenny.
And I'm Jenny. When you're not checking out the Waffle On podcast, why don't you check out
Knights of the Guild, the official fan podcast for the web series The Guild.
Each month, we'll bring you the latest news about the Guild cast, including what projects they're working on and what conventions they'll be attending.
Also, we'll be updating you on the current season.
We'll talk about some behind-the-scenes fun of Season 2,
as well as having cast, crew, and fan interviews.
So head over to iTunes and subscribe to Knights of the Guild.
Or go to our website for a direct download at knightsoftheguild.podbean.com. Zaboo!
Hi, this is Rick Moyer. And when I'm not listening to Waffle On, I'm producing my own podcast. And here's a shameless plug for it. Are you ready? If you like geeky TV, if you like science fiction, if you like life in general, and you want to be encouraged every week, join me for Take Him With You, the weekly podcast that's spiritual, not religious. Nobody's going to force you to believe any certain way. You can just enjoy being encouraged and listen to some crazy stories and some fun music every week. So join me. After you're done with Waffle On, tune in, go over to TakeHimWithYou.com, click on the iTunes, and download away. TakeHimWithYou.com.
Good day to you. My name is Boz. I'm doing this promo to encourage you to listen to our podcast, Here Goes Nothing. Now available on the Simply Syndicated 21st Century Media Network. Obviously, as you can tell from my voice, this show is extremely highbrow and only for the discerning listener.
Story about like a bowling green championship. Needless to say, I was covered in poo. So I was just run out of nightmares.
Yes.
And I can't get any weirder than squirrels. So. I tell you what kids would not be interested in these days, or would be rather funny to see today's kids on, would be Nightmare.
Greetings, challengers. And from which kingdom do you hail?
Are we as from Swindon, innit?
Here Goes Nothing, the show called Nothing that has a bit of everything.
I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, we seem to have lost Casey.
Look, I'm still here.
Drowning in mash.
No, I'm just going to cut you off because you're making me hungry.
Find us at simplysyndicated.com/shows/heregoesnothing.